Good morning, and welcome to the Nephros third quarter 2019 financial results conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Kirin Smith with PCG Advisory. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is Kirin Smith with PCG Advisory. Thank you all for participating in Nephros' third quarter 2019 conference call. Before we begin, I would like to caution that comments made during this conference call by management will contain forward-looking statements regarding the operations and future results of Nephros. I encourage you to review Nephros' filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including, without limitation, the company's Forms 10-K and 10-Q, which identify specific factors that may cause actual results or events to differ materially from those described in the forward-looking statements. Factors that may affect the company's results include, but are not limited to, its ability to successfully, timely, and cost-effectively develop, seek, and obtain regulatory clearance for and commercialize its products and service offerings, the rate of adoption of its products and services by hospitals and other healthcare providers, the success of its commercialization efforts, the effect on its business of existing and new regulatory requirements, and other economic and competitive factors. The content of this conference call contains time-sensitive information that is accurate only as of the date of the live call today, November 6, 2019. The company undertakes no obligation to revise or update any statements to reflect events or circumstances after the date of this conference call, except as required by law. I would now like to turn the call over to Darren Evans, Nephros' CEO. Darren, please go ahead.
Thank you, Kirin. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Nephros' Q3 2019 earnings conference call. I will begin the call with a brief overview of our third quarter results and provide a corporate update. I'll then turn the call over to Andy Astor, our COO, CFO, and Andy will do a deeper dive into our third quarter operating results. Q3 saw a continuation of our path. Total revenues were up approximately 80% versus Q3 2018. Our base business segments experienced growth versus the third quarter of last year. We also supported a number of pathogen outbreaks in the third quarter, continuing our second quarter progress. Our current proactive customer service-oriented strategy continues to work for both our strategic partners and our end customers. More and more hospitals are implementing their water management plans, and most of those plans include some level of filtration for high-risk areas. In the dialysis segment, we continue to see our EndoPure footprint growing slowly as customers realize the performance improvement possible with better filtration. We expect this segment to continue to see slow but very steady growth. In our commercial segment, we continue to see steady demand for our products in the quick service restaurant and convenience store markets. We continue to work with multiple large chains on long-term supply contracts. In the third quarter, we completed a usability study on our pathogen detection system. We intend to publish a white paper shortly that highlights the data parity between our portable real-time system and that of a benchtop system. Before the end of the year, we'll be in the field providing pathogen detection services using our system and Nephros personnel. Over the course of 2020, we'll be working with our strategic partners to roll out the system nationwide. We believe that infection control teams, when given the validated solution, will rapidly incorporate portable real-time testing into their overall water management plan strategy. We believe there will be a lot of synergy between the pathogen detection system and our infection control filtration products. Additionally, based on an understanding of the current spend by infection control teams, we believe the market for pathogen testing will eventually exceed the market for filters. We're actually very excited about this product segment. In regards to the second-generation hemodial filtration product developed under our specialty renal product subsidiary, we have finalized the design of both the device and the disposable filter and tube set. We will complete formative testing of the system this year and initiate our verification and validation testing early next year. We will begin displaying the device at the American Society of Nephrology annual conference this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We look forward to our first public appearance of a new generation system, and hopefully the feedback will be good enough to fill out our short list of sites who would like to implement our solution as soon as we're cleared by the FDA. I'll now turn the call over to Andy for financial review.
Thanks, Darren, and good morning, everybody. I'll provide now a look at our financial results for the quarter ended September 30, 2019, otherwise known as Q3. I'm very pleased to report our 13th consecutive quarter of year-over-year product revenue growth, with an average growth rate during those 13 quarters of over 65%. Of note, Q3's product revenues were more than seven times larger than the same quarter just 3 years ago in 2016. I also am very pleased to report that Nephros's quarterly revenue in Q3 exceeded an average of $1 million per month for the first time in the company's history. This result included strong performances from both our infection prevention business and our outbreak response business. As we have said consistently over the past year, we believe our steady revenue growth is indicative of Nephros's strong product portfolio, the increasing market awareness of our brand, our deep relationships with partner companies in the field, and the increasing number of regulations that require water testing and remediation. As a reminder, we recognize two distinct business segments, water filtration and renal products. Since water filtration represents 100% of our current revenues, I will discuss this business segment first and then move to consolidated results. Water filtration product revenues were $3.1 million for the quarter. This compares with $1.6 million in the same quarter last year, an increase of $1.5 million or 85%. Water filtration net loss was $0.3 million, an increase of 41% compared with a net loss of $0.2 million in the third quarter last year. This increase was driven largely by non-cash stock compensation expense due to the vesting of previously issued stock options. Adjusted EBITDA for the water filtration business was positive, $0.2 million this quarter, compared with slightly negative in 2018. This marks the second time in the past four quarters that adjusted EBITDA crossed into positive territory. Please refer to today's press release for more details about the calculation of adjusted EBITDA and its reconciliation to GAAP net income or loss. On a consolidated basis, Nephros reported total net revenues of $3.1 million for the quarter. This compares to $1.7 million in the same quarter last year, an increase of $1.4 million or 80%. Consolidated net loss was $0.7 million, an increase of 35% compared with a net loss of $0.6 million in the third quarter last year, again driven largely by non-cash stock compensation expense due to the vesting of previously issued stock options. Consolidated adjusted EBITDA was negative $0.2 million compared with negative $0.3 million in 2018, a 35% improvement. Cost of goods sold in the quarter were $1.3 million compared with $0.8 million in the same quarter last year, an increase of 65%. Gross margins for the quarter were 59% compared with 55% in the same quarter last year, and this is in line with our previously announced expectations of ongoing gross margins in the range of 55 to 60%. Research and development expenses were $0.8 million in the quarter compared to $0.4 million last year, an increase of 121% due to investments in both our new pathogen detection product and our second generation HDF device. Selling, general, and administrative expenses were $1.8 million this quarter, compared with $1.1 million in 2018, a 67% increase, largely due to new headcount to support increased revenues as well as non-cash stock compensation expense due to employee option vesting. Our cash balance at the end of the first quarter was $3.9 million, compared with $4.6 million at this time last year. And this completes the financial readout portion of my comments. Changing topics, I would also like to report that this morning we filed a shelf registration statement with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We became eligible to file a shelf registration when we listed on NASDAQ in August. Once declared effective, the shelf registration will cover up to $50 million of our securities, which may include shares of our common stock, preferred stock, warrants, debt securities, and or units. The terms of any offering, including the specific terms and prices of the securities, will be determined at the time of such offering and be made solely by means of prospectus included in the registration statement and any prospectus supplement that may be filed with the SEC relating to such offering. We have no immediate plans to issue any securities under the registration statement. Like many new listed companies, we consider it good corporate practice to maintain a shelf registration. Also included in this morning's registration statement are shares owned by Wexford Capital and its subsidiary Lambda Investors. Wexford has informed us that it, too, has no immediate plans to sell its Nephros shares. As previously mentioned, the registration statement relating to these securities has been filed with the SEC but has not yet become effective. These securities may not be sold, nor may offers to buy be accepted prior to the time that the registration statement becomes effective. This earnings call does not constitute an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy, nor shall there be any sale of securities in any state in which such offer, solicitation, or sale would be unlawful prior to registration or qualification under the securities law of any such state. I will wrap up my comments today on the subject of revenue guidance. At the beginning of the current quarter, we increased 2019 full-year guidance significantly from $8.5 to $9.5 million up to $9.5 to $10 million. At this time, I am pleased to reiterate that increased guidance, which is a planned increase over 2018 of 67 to 82%. In closing, we continue to present the Nephros story to the investment community and plan to attend a number of upcoming events throughout the next several months. We look forward to seeing you all then. Also, please feel free to contact us directly at info@nephros.com. We'll be happy to respond promptly. This concludes our formal presentation remarks. I would like to personally thank all of our stakeholders for your continued support, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon. We'll take questions from the audience now and also answer emailed questions as appropriate. Operator, please open the call for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Anthony Vendett with Maxim Group. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, Darren, you mentioned on the in the prepared remarks about QSRs. Can you talk about the opportunity there, since I know that the main focus is on hospitals and hospital systems, long-term care facilities? Can you talk about the opportunity in QSRs?
Sure. So QSRs, so quick service restaurants. There's, I don't know if there's a million of them. There's a lot of them in the U.S. and across the world. And what we purchased Aether, we purchased a unit that could go in and replace an Everpure system that would be in the back of the shop of these restaurants, or Kuno. Those are the two market leaders globally. And what we've decided to do in that area is chase the big fish. There's a nice base business that was built up before we acquired the company, and what we see is that with the stronger infrastructure that we have with Aether plus Nephros with engineers, we're able to bid for bigger contracts. And so, out of that $1 billion, $2 billion, I think it's a sort of $3 billion market globally. We think we can chip away at a contract or two a year that's $2, $3, $4 million a year sustained across a network of thousands of QSRs. Groups like McDonald's and Burger King and Subway and the large names, even the smaller names like Cabot, they tend to buy those units centrally. So we've gotten ourselves in front of as many as we can to offer an alternative, which tends to, what we've shown is a little premium product from a performance point of view, but really it's kind of a price game for these folks. And so we come at a competitive price and ability to follow it up with service. And these contracts are sort of 3 to 5 year contracts. And so we just started the process of chasing some of the bigger ones last year, do not expect to be able to close one in the first 12 months, but we think we're getting close on a few. So our opportunity for Nephros is step changes of 1, 2, 3 million a year, one or two of those contracts per year, kind of going forward is our goal.
Okay, so it's very possible then in 2020 you'll have one or two of those signed up.
When we started out on the hospital side against Paul, we never got invited to the table, and we never won a big contract. Now we're getting invited every time, and we're winning about half the time, patient of the month. So in this space where we never got invited to the table, we're now getting invited to the table, and eventually we start winning some of these. And so it's fair to expect that we might get one or two a year kind of going forward in 2020.
Okay, and then if you could just talk a little bit about the opportunity in waterborne pathogen detection. Seems like that's a natural complementary fit in your product suite. Where are you sort of in the process of beginning to roll that out? Is that a first quarter 2020, second quarter 2020?
So we're taking a very deliberate approach to this product. We want to make sure that we have a bunch of the key opinion leaders in the space sort of buying into the thesis that you can do real-time PCR-based detection on site and get an answer that's actionable. It won't be an answer that's validatable because the CDC elite labs have to have a stationary lab with lots of processes that wouldn't have the same dynamics as you would if you just doing tests in the field. But we feel that, and we've talked to a bunch of hospitals and experts, is that the data that you could acquire from a real-time system in the field is very actionable, and it can be validated in a CDC elite lab later. As we roll this out, we're going to first start as a service. So we're using Nephros personnel on-site, learning what issues they have real-time to understand how best to use the system. And as we perfect that process and service, then we'll be able to roll it out to our trusted partners who are on the ground anyway. So as you said, this is a complementary business for us. We are on the site with the filters, working with our strategic partners who are working with the hospital having an outbreak or sort of doing routine testing. So they're collecting samples anyway, and they're sending them off to other labs. So the reason why we feel this really works well is that there's already an expense line, both on a proactive basis, on a regular monthly basis, as well as in an outbreak situation, where they're spending money on testing. And this gives them an alternative that gives them faster data. But then we'll also get this in the room when they're deciding, oh, we have to filter up on floor 4, east wing. And so what we don't want to do is we don't want to launch too fast. We want to make sure that we fully understand how our data is used on a real-time basis before we put it in the hands of others, and you have sort of a 1 degree of separation between the answer and then ourselves. But what we do know is that most of our distributors, probably 95% of our distributors, do water testing now in some form or fashion in the hospitals already, and this would be a logical extension of what they already do.
Okay, I just have one follow-up question, and then I'll turn it back to the queue. Just from a high-level perspective, Darren, can you talk about, just in general, how some hospitals are more reactionary than proactive in terms of preventing these infections, and is it due to financial constraints that they don't have necessarily your system or one of your competitor systems in place, and then when they have an outbreak, they react, and that's an opportunity A, to do the detection system, and then B, sell them a system?
So every hospital in the U.S. is on a journey, and this is a journey of becoming more proactive on their water management safety plans. Some started years and years ago because they had a death or they had a problem. Some started because the senior manager at one of the hospitals was at somewhere that had a death and a problem. And 5 years ago, the problem was a million, $2 million lawsuit that no one heard about. Today, because of the CMS requirements of testing, because of the class action lawsuits, the biggest one which came out of the Flint Hospital post-lead crisis, like there was a bunch of lead problems, but people actually died in the hospital from Legionella. So there's a higher awareness on water safety as an issue. And as hospitals begin their journey, and it is a long journey, you have to come in, get a full assessment, make a plan, start working on your testing protocols, you know, go through a couple cycles of testing, understand if your plan's okay. And in that process, if you have an outbreak, everyone's reactive to an outbreak. So no matter if you're an early stage in the process of making your plan or late stage, you still do not plan on having a test, but you have a plan to react if there is a positive test. And so there's even the best institutions with a fully baked water management plan and a proactive testing approach where they're testing 10, 20 sites a month, they can still have a reactive response to an outbreak because that's part of their plan now. Some hospitals haven't reacted yet, and so it's a little more panicky, but others, even if they have a full plan, it's still a reaction because you're not planning on having a water main break upstream that crashes your system with 35 pounds of Legionella-filled dirt. So it's still going to be a reaction no matter what. And so part of our support for our customers, distributor, and end customer is to provide proactive filtration for those high-risk areas where the little bit of dirt might get there, and then be there when we can. A couple years ago, we talked about moving our facility to an airport. So we were up in a long ways from an airport. We moved to 15 minutes from Newark so that we could react instantaneously and get filters within 4 hours. If we get a call at 5 o'clock, and this happens a number of times in the last few quarters, if you get a call at 4:50 on a Friday afternoon, if you can't get them filters on a plane so they can filter up over the weekend, they can't open their surgical wards on Monday because this awareness I talked about. When there's a problem, the CDC and the Department of Health land on their site, and they've got to be heavily reactive. So even the ones in the beginning of the journey are going to be the same reactive level as the ones at the end of the journey or closer to the end, just because that's just part of the plan. Like, you're not planning on having some massive batch of bacteria just kind of fall into your pipes and then have to deal with it.
Okay, that's very helpful. I'll hop back in the queue. Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from Howard Halpern with Taglich Brothers. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on a great quarter, guys.
Thanks, Howard.
In terms of the growth that you experienced this quarter, could you describe, how much was it from maybe your increased distribution network, and how much was it internal in the hospitals just going into different areas within the hospital itself?
Andy, you got that?
Yeah. Hi, Howard, and thanks for your comment. We are not, and we've talked about this before, we're not really significantly growing our distribution network. We do so on a careful basis. So the vast majority of our growth comes from a combination of within our existing distribution network, growth into new hospitals and growth within our existing hospitals. And while I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, it's roughly they're both large numbers. It's not one over the other. There's a good healthy growth of new business, roughly one a day, of new sites that we're going out into, and then there's also a good healthy growth in the hospital on top of the recurring revenue that's built into our business model. So, looking at it from 20,000 feet, it's a very healthy mix of new and old business, with more of our total revenue coming from existing customers than from new customers as the new customers are ramping up.
Okay. And going back to, the waterborne pathogen detection that's coming up, that once things get set and you're starting to ramp, that product is really going to sit in both areas of outbreaks and routine testing.
Yeah, we think so. Darren, do you want to talk about why?
Yeah, so the way the test now. It comes in a couple different flavors. There's a real-time test for ATP, which is the marker that there's a cell that's creating energy. But we don't know if that cell's alive or dead. But if you have 10, a signal of 10, then it's not a big deal. If it's a 10,000, then you know there's a colony somewhere upstream. So hospitals have a cycle now with their water management plans where there's sort of 5 to 10 tests per site per month that are randomly chosen, and that's just sort of good management. And then when an outbreak comes, that's when they can do up to 500 or 1,000 tests because they have to do a hot spot, a heat map of the building to figure out where the real outbreak is, because it could be biofilm on a certain section of pipe, so only the fourth floor is affected, or if it's coming in from the outside, then it's everywhere. So they've got to do a heat map, and then you have to, as you treat with the heat or chlorine, you have to then figure out, am I solving the problem? And that can take 3 to 4 to 6 months of routine testing of a much higher number of sites. So our hope is that this can be incorporated into the proactive plan, which is kind of on a regular basis. And many of our distributors are in there testing the pH and the chlorine levels and the metal levels of the water in their pipes anyway. And so we're hoping that we've created a system to be very portable, and it fits in a Pelican case, and they can drag it up to a desk and pop it on the desk, and they can incorporate into that once monthly testing, and they can go to 3 to 4 to 10 sites, however many hospital customers they have, and that's kind of a regular usage. And then when an outbreak happens, then you can bring in and get started, and then. And then maybe ship in a few more systems so that you can sort of test more on a higher number of bases. But we think that this data point gives an adequate checkbox of, yep, we're fine, which is really the goal. We're not shooting for, our levels are 10.2. We're shooting for, is it 10? Is it 100? Is it 1,000? Is it 10,000? 10,000 colony-forming units per milliliter, you've got a real problem. If it's 10, that's background noise. So we think that this kind of system can give you the checkbox. And then, as I said before, the CDC Elite Lab is sort of the validated methodology that everyone's going to look for final sign-off. But you don't have to do every single test as a final sign-off validation. The real-time provides you actionable on-the-ground data, and then for confirmation, you send it off to a lab. And the issue with that lab is it takes 7 days to grow a culture and then to run a plate count. So that's just not going to work real-time. During an outbreak, and it definitely for routine testing, you don't want to have to wait 7 days to know that your pipes are okay. So you can kind of send it off as a confirmation that everything's okay. But we think both proactive and reactive are, just as our filtration happens, it will be the solution that people choose.
Okay, that's helpful. And one final one. What is your hope or expectation for the HDF system and the timeline when potentially clearance could occur?
So we're completing the formative testing this year. Then we start the verification validation testing early next year. If we can complete that by end of Q1, early Q2, we'll be able to prepare the documentation to submit at the same time we finish the testing. Best case scenario, we're cleared in Q2. If the FDA takes a bit longer, then it's sort of a Q3 thing. But a lot of the testing has some piece has a 1 month clock, some piece has a 3 month clock, and it just sort of put it into the process, and it'll come out the other side. So we think somewhere in that sort of Q2, Q3 frame is where we kind of expect, being a bit conservative on our testing time frame. But we're obviously going to try to push that as fast as we can.
Okay. Well, thanks, and keep up the great work, guys.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Bob Wassman with Benchmark Company. Please go ahead.
Hi, Darren. Hi, Andy. Congratulations on the good quarter. Just a couple questions. Most of mine have been answered. I know in the past you've mentioned number of customers. Do you have that number for us at the end of the third quarter?
I don't have it handy in front of me, but it's in the we've been using 1,215, so it's over that number now. That number was pretty up to date, so it's 1,200 or 1,300 customers right now.
Okay. Also, you've done a good job mentioning all your new products, but you haven't mentioned the CRRT, the diastate regeneration system. How's the timeline on that look at this point?
We haven't gotten feedback from the FDA on the path yet. That's one where it's we're trying to use a predicate of the Ready device, which is it's an older device. It uses carbon to absorb some of the dialysate contaminants, but it also has a number of other pieces in there. And so we've had a couple conversations with the FDA. We're putting together a package to let them understand our full goals. And then once we get the feedback from the FDA on what they expect to see before they clear it, then we'll have a timeline. But we don't know if they're going to require a 90-day test in humans, or if they'll just take benchtop testing or somewhere in the middle. So we've got to get that clarified before we have a timeline.
Okay, great. And just one more, going back to the next generation HDF, what are your, I know you're not certain about when the clearance will come, but what are your marketing plans for that? Will you add any new staff, or are you going to wait and see?
You know what's great about that system and that product is that we've done the homework in the past, and we know where the demand is, at least the initial demand. And one of our goals at the conference this week is to just confirm our shortlist. I've told people in the past that we believe we have about 50 sites or 50 nephrologists who would put this in their system tomorrow if it was available. We're going to be talking with those and just confirming that list. I don't actually believe we'll need to do any marketing or sales for the first year or two. When we roll this out, we're not planning on doing a massive rollout across the whole system. Our goal is to do a very measured rollout, a site or two a month, so we can train them and we can make sure we avoid the problems we had last time.
And the purchasing timeline for that is pretty much right away, or do you have to get in?
One of the nice things about this new system is that it's so cheap from a machine point of view, and the value really is in the tube sets. We haven't decided if we're even going to sell it. We may just lease it for $1 a month or some number like that if they commit to putting three or four patients on. So there's not going to be a capital cost process to go through procurement. It's going to be a, hey, do you want it? Sure. Okay, let's load it in there. And maybe you can have it for a year for free to trial it and then decide to buy it later. But the machine itself, we don't expect to cost more than $1,000 or $2,000.
Okay. All right. Okay, great. Thanks a lot, and congrats again on the quarter.
At this time, I'm seeing no further questions. I would like to conclude our question and answer session as well as today's conference. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.